Right. Hello and welcome to a new episode of The Sound of Finance, a podcast by ZDB Consulting. And in today's episode, we want to dive deep into the intersection of politics and financial services. We have to talk about several hotly debated issues in German politics, be it the ongoing recession, the infamous Sondervermögen, and additional private investments set up to tackle the investment backlog in Germany, and also a very actual topic, the reform of the private pension provision. And to discuss all these topics, I am more than happy to be joined by Arvid Koller. He is Managing Director for Germany at the Association for Financial Markets in Europe, AFME for short. And AFME represents Europe's leading banks and plays a key role in shaping policy discussions around capital markets and financial regulation as well. Arvid has long been closely involved in the dialogue between policymakers on the one hand and financial industry on the other hand on how to actually strengthen Germany's capital markets and how to improve access to financing for businesses and for investors. So, Arvid, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Johannes. Hello from Frankfurt. Thank you for the kind introduction. And it's a real pleasure to be with you today and to discuss all these questions and topics that you raised already. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, same for me. Thank you so much. So this episode directly refers to our recent study. To give you some background, AFME and ZDB published a study on the mobilization of private capital in Germany. So was the title. And this study elaborated, say, key areas where the capital markets could make a difference in German politics. Maybe to start broadly into the podcast, from AFME's perspective, from your perspective, why is the role of capital markets such an important topic for Germany right now? I mean, you remember there was a joint study from us some 2.5 years ago on a very similar topic. So what has actually changed, Arvid?
It's a very good way to segue into why we've done a second study. So maybe let me start a few years ago when we as AFME really started to outreach to decision makers in Berlin. And the challenge back then was really to explain why capital markets in Germany matter at all. And back then we were often faced with the question of we have the existing German banking system. Most funding actually comes via bank loans. Why are capital markets important? I think now we've seen the debate really transform. So we have the pressure on growth, on competitiveness. We have huge challenges on infrastructure and defense. And I think having just come back actually from a week of meetings in Berlin, the questions are not so much, why do we need capital markets or what is the role of capital markets in Germany? The question is, how do we really mobilize private capital? So this is actually why we've then thought to do a second study, because the challenges have changed for the economy and the country. And I think that this is why it's been really useful to work together again and to look at a few more recent challenges that we see. You referenced a few of those right in the beginning. We, of course, see a huge backlog in the investment side. Germany struggles to really get innovation on the road and transform its economy to have a lot of innovative companies in this country transform into bigger companies, into scale-ups, into unicorns. And then at the same time, there's a lot of pressure on the federal budget, not least because of the pension system, where I think about a quarter of the federal budget helps to stabilize the pay-as-you-go system. And then, you know, one of the other themes that we looked at, of course, is, and I think that the two of us are German, so we can safely say that, but Germany is a nation of savers, which is great on the one hand, but we're not really a nation of productive savers. So we do not really fully utilize what we have on the savings account. So we still really lack in terms of retail participation and inclusion in capital markets. So we thought, let's look at all of these challenges together and sit down again. And this is why we came to a second study.
I couldn't agree more. So I think it's great to hear really like state-of-the-art insights from German politics, from your recent discussions with members of the German Bundestag, of the parliament. So maybe let's start with diving into one topic being the investment gaps in Germany, which arose roughly 1 year ago with the reform of the debt brake. So our study highlighted a significant investment gap as Germany faces, you named them already, major structural challenges, right? From the energy transition to the recent remilitarization, fulfilling the NATO goals, digitization and infrastructure as well. So what would you say, how big is this challenge? And talking about private capital, why can't these traditional financing sources and our infamous Sondervermögen alone meet these investment gaps?
Yeah, I think that the challenge cannot be underestimated. So one of the figures that you've come up, but we've also seen it from the German Federation of Industry, is that Germany needs to mobilize 1.4 trillion euros by 2030 to modernize across infrastructure and also meet the energy transition. We also know that we need to mobilize more than 300 billion euros a year annually just on net zero itself. So I think the challenge is very clear. And one of the many graphs that you had in the study is one that some listeners may have already seen, because it was printed by Friedrich Merz on a huge poster, and he showed it to the CDU-CSU, the Conservative Parliamentary Group, last year. And it shows that government consumption continues to rise, private investment is weakening, and GDP growth pretty much since 2019-2020 has completely stagnated.
The fever curves of Friedrich Merz, I recently read. I think that's a nice description, yeah, of his fears when he tries to fall asleep. Yeah,
and I think this outlines the challenge at a macro level, right? And Johannes, you mentioned how we can tackle this. And I think this is where capital markets, and specifically banks and capital markets, come in. You mentioned the special budget lines, the 500 billion and the Sondervermögen, which are essentially public money to solve issues of an investment backlog. But if we look at this, I think it's a good first start. It can help to address this backlog, but it cannot fully solve the issues that we see in the German economy. So what we really need to do is think of ways how to include private capital, how to free private capital, and really use capital markets. And you identified quite a few mechanisms in there, Johannes, which are particularly relevant and which I thought were helpful. Do you want to maybe go through those a bit?
Yeah, sure. Of course, there are these governmental projects where private capital cannot help at all, right? When it comes to defense and resilience, we are talking about topics where the private investors should not know about the details. So this is kept secretly for apparent reasons. But on the other hand, we have net zero ambitions, we have the national infrastructure, and indeed there are quite efficient capital market mechanisms. For the first challenge, reaching climate neutrality, there are dedicated climate and social bonds on a European level. Similarly, on a European level for a broader spectrum of projects, we have these cross-border growth funds where capital is really pooled from different member states into a larger fund dedicated to several projects within the whole EU. But of course, there are also these projects of national or federal interests, right? For which there are, on the one hand, the federal special purpose vehicles, so-called, or SPVs for short, which are issued for particular projects. And of course, it's helpful to find projects where a securitization becomes possible, being a stock market type vehicle or mechanisms. So for instance, a bridge of a German autobahn or the energy web for renewable energies, there we have a situation where you can create sort of a yield, an investment yield. So if you mobilize your private capital to build a bridge or to renovate a bridge, there will be a concrete capital flow from the truckers' toll crossing the bridges. So a yield is created and there is, so to say, a motivation to invest your money in it because you get it back with a 5 or 10% yield. So this must be the ultimate goal of every capital market mechanism for apparent reasons, I guess. But maybe it's interesting to hear from you, Arvid, how on the different levels initiatives are forming. Think about the capital market union on the European level, but also on the so-called Deutschlandfonds on the national level. Maybe you could enlighten the audience on what is going on and how promising these mechanisms could be or vehicles could be.
Sure, Johannes, and you mentioned quite a few already, of course, which the study identified and which I think are really helpful, whether it's blended finance vehicles, there are also green bonds, securitization that you mentioned. But then there are things that Germany can do at national level, and they are, which is helpful. We've seen the Deutschlandfonds, which is exactly that kind of platform that tries to bring in public and private money. So there are around 30 billion with public guarantees. Which is a great first step, I think, to mobilize needed funds. On the other hand, if we compare this to the number we mentioned earlier, 1.5 trillion, 1.4 trillion needed by 2030, there's still a huge gap of the capital that is required. And this is probably why we do need this European dimension as well, where we are, of course, huge supporters of deeper and more integrated capital markets. Now we're speaking in Brussels about the Savings and Investment Union, which really aims to make sure that we're breaking down some of the national barriers that trap capital so that capital can move more freely and to the more or more efficiently within Europe, but also that tries to attract capital to the EU. And here I think there are also some measures which could be really helpful, which sit outside the pure capital markets world. So we have had some very recent proposals on an EU Inc., essentially harmonizing corporate rules to ensure that there's a EU level corporate structure, so-called 28th regime, that would ensure quicker company registrations, also via digital channels. I think personally, it's also really important to look at harmonizing insolvency rules. If you're an outside investor looking at the EU right now, you often still see many different national rules and regulations. And I think if we can move some of that to the EU level, it makes it easier for outside EU investors to invest in Europe, makes it more attractive, of course, that on the one hand brings in capital. On the other hand, of course, it also allows that capital within the EU to move across member states and really try to get to where it needs to be in the most effective way possible.
Yeah, thank you, Arvid, for these insights. So at least I got the feeling that many things are going into the right direction. There are also these ongoing debates, at least within the E6 circle, right, of the largest economies in the European Union about a capital market union. But I think so far we've missed one topic, being innovation. So in the current debate around the Sondervermögen and all these fueling investments, the Sondervermögen itself is seen in Berlin as a way to stimulate investment and to stimulate growth, GDP growth in the long run. But at least in the study, we came to the conclusion that the spending alone into infrastructure net zero and so on can risk to become a short-term booster, right? And the Keynesian rationale behind public investments put some money into the system and some growth will follow, but it does not necessarily end up with sustainable growth, right? So I'd be interested what structural changes are needed to ensure Germany achieves a durable GDP growth, right? Rather than just a Strohfeuer, as we say in Germany, a flash in the pan, which is solely driven by public funds.
I think that's a very good point, Johannes. And indeed, if we look at the public money that's coming in, that's helpful, that's a first step. But without any private investments and private capital, we will just not meet the financing needs. But there are other challenges, I think, deeper issues which relate to innovation and also productivity. And I think this is where we then maybe get to sustainable growth. If we think about new technologies, new business models, and how to really make use of what we have in Germany, but also in Europe in terms of innovation. And I think this is something where we can look at to create this growth. I was looking at the companies in the German DAX the other day, those 40 companies. And, you know, a lot of these are still companies founded in the 18 or 1900s. You know, what we really lack is companies in there which have been founded in the last 20 or so years, which are active in new technologies. We have one real tech company, SAP, but we don't, for example, have a company that specializes on AI, just to think of a sector which is currently, of course, on everyone's mind. So I think this is something where we can really look at and why the reform agenda has to be broader than simply looking at public budgets and these special budget lines, which pour money, rightly so, on relevant issues. But this is where we want to look at also having in mind the sustainable growth that you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. So innovation is a topic which is often excluded from all these political discussions. I mean, you've mentioned the DAX companies looking at their business models. We are risking to turn into an industrial museum of Germany, of the technologies about the from the 20th and 19th century. So there is still a strong industrial base in chemical industries and automotive, no doubt, but China is lurking. And what I found interesting in our study was that innovation itself isn't the problem, but the ecosystem is where innovative ideas can grow. So in our study, we took a look on the Global Innovation Index, GII, and compared Germany with the United States. And it turned out that the innovation index itself is not really different. I mean, the ideas are there. There's the highest number of patents in the world, exactly in Germany. It's 25,000 patents within 1 year, 2025. The universities are still strong. Max Planck Society is one of the world's most renowned scientific communities. So the ideas are there. There are even these startups, scale-ups in artificial intelligence. I think about this Black Forest Labs. You might have heard about this startup, which was recently sold to the US, producing the best generative AI with respect to pictures in the world, and it's just gone and not contributing to the German economy anymore. Similarly, for photovoltaics industry some 10 years ago, or even the computer, which was invented by Konrad Zuse and some others. So it's always the same problem. And I think the key number we should look at is not this innovation index. The ideas are there. We're still the land of the thinkers and maybe also poets, I don't know. But the venture capital investment, particularly in percent of the GDP, there it becomes very apparent why we are lacking behind, for instance, the US. So there's 0.07% of GDP is actually venture capital invested in Germany. For the US, it's even in terms of the GDP, so relative numbers, it's more or less 8 times higher. So Arvid, from AFME's perspective, what role could deeper capital markets play in strengthening a startup and venture ecosystem in Germany? How can we make these ideas to unicorns?
You're absolutely right. It's not that we're lacking the ideas or the talent, but we're lacking the financing path from a good idea to a startup, to a scale up, and then ultimately, hopefully, to a unicorn. So a company that has a 1 billion plus valuation, essentially. One figure, and you'll forgive me for quoting something that's not from our study, but from the Cookies and Noyer report, the Fife report. But one figure that stuck with me from that is that in the past years, 50 years, Europe has produced only a few firms with a market cap above 10 billion. The US has hundreds of them. Mm-hmm. All existing 6 trillion euro companies are in the US. So I think it's that really shows where the problem lies. And maybe to think of the solutions, we might need to first dig a bit deeper into the underlying problem. So if you look at the German economy, that also comes out in the study very well, I think. Germany remains structurally very bank-centric, meaning that a lot of companies are still first and foremost financed via bank loans. This has served the economy very well for many decades, particularly, of course, the Mittelstand, the SMEs. We can see that 31%, nearly one third of all corporate financing in Germany comes from loans. But if we compare that to the US, that's more than three times the share, right? Mm-hmm. I think this is where we can look to other countries, not just the US, but also the UK or also France, where these countries are much better when it comes to utilizing capital markets. Sweden, I think, is also a fantastic case to look at. They're doing exceptionally well in using capital markets. The Draghi report, I think, had a number in there, which showed that Sweden had more listings in Stockholm than Germany, France, Spain, and the Netherlands together over the last 10 years or so. And those figures really bring it home. So you already mentioned the point about lack of VC funding. This is what we need to look at. But this is also why we need to really look at deeper capital markets across the funding ladder, right? So how to ensure that there are more public-private co-investments, more cross-border VC as well. I think that is one really important one. Better secondary markets for private shares, a simpler IPO pathway. We have the EU Listings Act, which is coming in and is being implemented. So this is something that could really help. So there are many practical mechanisms to ensure that we move from this scale-up phase to a phase where we see companies list and also achieve these high valuations. And that, of course, means, I think, also that we avoid this trend where more and more companies, Johannes, as you mentioned, Black Forest, who either get sold off to the US or to other countries, or they list abroad. So you can think of very traditional German companies like Birkenstock. You can also think of other ones like BioNTech, who of course sit with their headquarters still very close to Frankfurt, where I am. But ultimately, if you list as a company abroad, there is a risk that going forward, you also move more and more of your company over there. Why is that? Why do companies list abroad? Because a lot of the times, particularly in the US, they achieve higher valuations. There's a much more in-depth ecosystem there that supports that listing. So the more we can do to keep these companies here, to encourage them to list here, to encourage them to rely on deep and liquid capital markets in Europe, the more we also reinforce this trend, because these companies then also, of course, create their own ecosystem here. And I think it's a very complementary way of supporting the market here. Yeah.
I think one key message or one invitation of this podcast episode is indeed to rethink things on a European level. You mentioned the cross-border venture capital, which is a decisive instrument, but only holds when we have harmonized tax regimes, when we have fund passporting rules and standardized investments that could really enable these pan-European funds. But maybe to to open up a third topic of today's podcast. It is more on a national level. We've talked about the European growth in general, but Germany is also facing an additional problem, which is known for quite a while, the demographic change. And this goes hand in hand with a required reform of the pension system. And on the public side, I think we have to be patient for some more month until the government presents their ideas to reform the pay-as-you-go system. But of course, we have a second and a third pillar in our German pension system. And there is a deep connection to the capital markets as well, because recently the AVD, for short, the Altersvorsorge Depot, was announced by German politics, will be launched at the beginning in 2027. So how could generally the broader participation in capital markets contribute to a more sustainable retirement savings in Germany facing the demographic challenges?
I think I already mentioned one figure right at the beginning, which is that around one quarter of the federal budget is essentially subsidizing the pay-as-you-go pension system that we have here in Germany, which essentially means those of us who are currently employed and therefore pay taxes, but also pay into the pension system, essentially pay directly what pensioners receive. And then once that population is retired, we rely on those in the workforce then to pay in at the same time. With an aging population and a smaller workforce, of course, that system gets under a lot of pressure. It is already under huge pressure, and I think that pressure will only grow. This also means, if we think broader about the German economic system, it means that the federal budget has more and more constrained flexibility in terms of what the government can invest in. And we need to think across all three pillars of the pension system. Now, as AFME, I would say the pension system is not our bread and butter work. We focus on capital markets, but it is such an important sector, an important piece of the puzzle. A, because it's a real challenge that we see, as I described, but then also B, because that can, if you look at capital markets, really make a big difference. A big difference in terms of what those who save right now to plan for the retirement can expect to see once they retire. But also when it comes to creating pools of liquidity that then in a complementary way, again, help the economy, help these startups and scale-ups who could receive more funding. So I think the pieces are all connected here. I think from a pillar one perspective, so the public pension system, we saw in the last government's attempts to open that up to capital markets, to invest a small proportion into a capital markets-based fund. I think that would be a good idea, a good first step. But we have also seen, and that comes out really well in your points, in your study, is that we essentially can just look across the border to Sweden, where reforms 30 years ago were around, I think, 2.5% of public pension savings get invested into pension funds, which are then active on capital markets, have created huge pools of liquidity and have really helped those who are looking to retire in Sweden to do so without fear. So I think we can look at other European countries. We can, of course, also look to the UK or the US on the first pillar, but we need to do something. And then you mentioned the Altersvorsorge Depot, which, of course, is a private pension reform. Again, a really huge step in Germany, because we do need to reform. I think it's very positive that the government has pushed this over the line, that we see no capital guarantees there, that we're moving to defined contribution system. So I think this is helpful because it ensures that those who save up proactively actually get the benefits of their work. But I think we also should look across the other pillar, which basically means occupational pensions. And also thinking of ways how on that part we can include capital markets in the equation. If you do that across all pillars, I think you can really make a difference and really create pools of liquidity, which in turn will help the economy grow. And that's also this kind of sustainable growth over a very long time that we need to think of. But one thing that really interested me, Johannes, is your assessment of the Altersvorsorge Depot, because you actually reworked that after the government made some last minute changes before it comes into force. So what would be your assessment of the Altersvorsorge Depot? How is it going to work, and will it be a success?
Yes, so indeed, we did the whole calculation. We took the proposal from the government and put all the tax legislation and all the special rules into account. And maybe this was already the biggest problem of our Altersvorsorge Depot. It took me quite a while to set up this Excel table and to run some sensitivity analyses. So maybe the good news. First, it came out that the Altersvorsorge Depot, which is quite a lot backed with public money, with basically tax money supporting your investments at the capital markets, it is quite fruitful in the long run. It could outperform your ETF savings plan in many, many scenarios, be it the years until retirement, be it the assumed annual ETF return. So how well is the world's economy performing in the coming decades? So there's often a ratio between Altersvorsorge Depot and ETF savings plan bigger than one. So this is quite good, I would say. It's a huge step forward if you compare it with these poor yields of the Riester-Rente. But like I said, the lacking simplicity did not only make it problematic to set up this calculation tool, but it is also for all the population which is quite capital market averse, confronting the population with such a complicated way of becoming active at the capital markets is not the right way, I would say. This is what we can learn from countries like Sweden, from like Switzerland and so on.
If I may interject here, I think you make an excellent point, because it's a step in the right direction, but it almost again seems like a very German way of doing things, which is going the right way but making it extremely complex. And I think you looked at it from the perspective of somebody who really spends a lot of time on this, who reinvests any tax benefits received again, and then it's a success. But that requires a lot of active participation. And one thing that I've myself noticed, having lived in the UK, for example, is that the easier and the more streamlined things are, the easier it is to participate in capital markets. And one other thing I found really interesting in the study is that you kind of looked across all of the themes that we today discussed in terms of effectiveness, in terms of what helps the most, and both on the pension side and also the retail investment side. One of the points that came really through is that tax incentives matter, and they are one of the fastest and quickest and easiest ways to really get people active, to get them to save for their retirement, or to really use their savings and more productively invest these.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So in the end, all the people are rational economists to some degree. They are indeed calculating, but they do not want to be bothered by this complexity of German tax law, about complex refunding processes, and also the payout procedure, which is again very complicated when it comes to the law of life insurances versus asset managers and so on. So this is something we have to finally learn. Make it simple, and then things will work out. Maybe looking at the time, I mean, there are many tough and hotly debated topics that we've encountered today, and hopefully the audience also realized that they are closely interwoven. So maybe, Arvid, to you, looking ahead, if you had to prioritize just one or two, let's say, original reforms that could truly unlock private capital in Germany, be it in regulation or pension policy, capital markets in general, what would they be? And what would you suggest the German cabinet? What would you suggest Friedrich Merz, Mr. Klingbeil, Mrs. Reiche, and all these guys?
Well, we discussed a lot of challenges, but we also touched on quite a few things that can be done. And there are always more than two. If we had a silver bullet that could solve all these issues immediately, we could have done so very quickly already. But I think overall, if we think about all these complementary parts of the puzzle, we should make use of that. And one of the charts that has really stuck with me from the study is one that shows what German households do with their money. And over the last 20 years, the share that German households have in savings and deposits, so on the savings account, for example, has not changed, and it's 70%, right? And I think this describes us quite well as a nation. We're quite risk averse, and a lot of the times for good reason, but I think now we have a good chance to change this in a positive way. And if I had to just choose two things, I think let's try to increase retirement savings and household participation in capital markets, make this more simple and make it scalable. And this then really creates this liquidity then that can be productively invested, that helps the economy, that really takes away some of the huge pressure on public finances. So that's one. And two, you won't be surprised to hear that from someone who is looking at Brussels and the EU so much of his of his day-to-day life. Let's look at the European scale. Let's really progress the Savings and Investment Union in Europe. Let's try to attract capital to Europe. Let's free up trapped capital and ensure that there are stronger funding channels that go to innovation and infrastructure.
Yeah, what a great summary for all the policymakers listening to our Sound of Finance podcast. Thank you so much, Arvid, for your time, for your insights, and also thank you to the audience for your attention to this decisive topic for Germany's economic prosperity. So see you soon in the next episode, Sound of Finance, and goodbye. Goodbye to you, Arvid.
Thanks for having me.